Thank you for listening to the Faith Radio Mornings podcast. Enjoy the conversation.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings.
Let it rise.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour, and it is Monday, June 5th. Who'd have ever thunk it's already June, and it is. And it's we had quite a feeling of summer this weekend. It was awfully nice. I hope it was nice where you were. And it is quite a weekend of sports activities, too. There were 7 Grand Slam home runs over the weekend, and the first no-hitter pitched. So it was kind of an exciting weekend. And then the NBA, we've got the that's already 2-0. LeBron James is going to have to start coming back real soon to get his Cleveland team back in this matchup. And Rebecca's looking at me like, oh, sports. There's the big eye roll.
Well, it's you can like it.
I do like sports.
I'm happy for you.
Thank you so much.
I hope your teams won. I don't know anything
about
them.
They actually did. Some of my teams did win.
Oh, good. That's awesome.
Yes, yes. But there is so much crazy chaotic news over the weekend, and we're going to talk about it. I'm going to interrogate the mastermind from Des Moines in just a minute, and we're going to get started with Patrick Albanese. And we're going to talk about what happened over the weekend. Of course, if you're just waking up and getting your day started, you probably know what happened over the weekend with the terrorist attack in London, another one. And there's been a lot of pain coming out of London. This is the second attack they've had in a while. And you have the mayor saying, don't be alarmed. I don't know if that's good advice. I think I would be very alarmed. So we're going to talk to Patrick about that. And also, this is the first. This is the week that they're going to be questioning James Comey on what he knew, and that's going to be very entertaining. I think that's going to be something that I'm going to look forward to hearing. Who's going to hate him this week? I'm going to be very curious to find out. So anyway, Patrick Albanese from West Des Moines is on the studio line. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, he will join us in conversation. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Monday. Be back in a minute.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain,
I could while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
And of course, that walk-up song is for the leadoff batter this morning, Patrick Albanese from West Des Moines. Patrick, good morning.
Yes, hopefully I don't bunt.
Well, don't assume the bunt position, because once you assume the bunt position, you generally bunt.
Yeah, people pretty much know what you're going to do. I always admired you know, the old baseball players that could completely fool you. And you were like, oh, he bunted.
Yeah, unlike when the pitchers would get up there. You know, yeah,
my technique in Little League to get on first base was just to get hit by a pitch. Which is pretty easy when a 10-year-old is trying to throw a 70-mile-an-hour fastball. Just stand at the plate. You'll get hit.
Don't worry. You'll get on base.
Yeah, I still have stitch marks on my back from 45 years ago. They never come out.
Speaking of getting hit by a pitch, did you see when Bryce Harper got hit by a pitch last week? And he literally just went after the pitcher, and a big brawl broke out.
Well, I believe there was a 2 to 3 second hesitation. I have no idea why he hesitated. Was he thinking, I think I can get away with taking a swipe at this guy? It's like there's millions of people watching right now. There's YouTube. You're going to get caught. Go to space.
Yeah.
But it's almost like he's looking around going, yeah, I think I got a clear shot.
I've got nothing between me and him, so I'm going to go after him.
Yeah. Who would tell on me?
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
All right. I appreciate the laugh this morning, because it feels good to laugh, because there's a lot of bad news. And the London rampage, 7 dead, 45 injured.
Andy, I don't know if you read the Telegraph this morning. You know, you often have – I used to always like to read some of the British newspapers to see what was coming to America. And many years of living in California, I used to say, here's what's coming to the rest of the states. You know, Britain would get things first. These policy ideas would be adopted in the more liberal states. And then you move to the Midwest and say, here's what's coming. And in the Telegraph, they say, you know, the police, counterterrorism officers, had already recorded people planning this attack a month ago.
Hmm.
And that they had found somebody that was researching YouTube videos to plot a van and knife attack in London.
Wow.
And nothing happened. Nothing happened. Remember the old, you know, if you see something, say something?
Right.
Yeah. They didn't finish the statement. It's, if you see something, say something. We'll do nothing, but we might just call you Islamophobic.
Yeah. Right.
That's about it.
Right.
That's what they do.
Yeah. Run, hide, tell.
Right. Yeah. We're still not going to do anything. And I don't mean to even laugh at it. It's so tragic. And we have to learn that maybe when you do see, you know, grandma always had it best, you know, you see something, you know, birds of a feather flock together type of stuff. Maybe when you see people acting suspiciously, there's something suspicious going on.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
And what is your take on the way Theresa May is handling this, the prime minister and the mayor, when he says nothing to be alarmed at? I think that's kind of misleading.
Well, when did they hire elect Fonzie to be their mayor?
I don't know.
Is this the guy that's going to, you know, someday eventually have to stand in front of a microphone and say, he couldn't mutter the word terrorism.
No, he couldn't.
He could not. And, you know, one of the things that really struck me odd with Theresa May, and I know, you know, not a whole lot about her. You know, she ignored me in high school, of course.
Of course she did.
But she had this here's the thing. I cut out the quote. She says it will this radical ideology. It will only be defeated when we turn people's minds away from the violence and make them understand that our values, pluralistic British values, are superior to anything offered by the preachers and supporters of hate. Well, that's all fine and dandy and nicely said, but these are the same people that for 50 years have been pushing a culture of moral relativism, of cultural relativism, that's saying that there is no culture better than any other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you must embrace all cultures. And so now you're saying, oh, okay, so you're having an about face on that. Are you telling me that at this point in time, your actual belief is different, that there are some superior cultures? Here's what it makes me think, and I have no idea if this is going to work, but
when worlds collide.
Did that come across your microphone?
Oh, yeah. Did it ever? Yeah.
It's like going, so you're telling me that right now, are you having an about face, or are you going to, I mean, you're going to have to go back to people and say, okay, we were wrong about that. Fonzie is everywhere, for crying out loud.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on a little bit to, I don't know if you saw the interview that Megyn Kelly had last night with Vladimir Putin.
I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah. And his take on it was, there was no conversation. What do you people do? You guys must lead boring lives that you want to talk about this. There was nothing. There was no conversations.
No. And of course, you know, we had the big supposed smoking gun last week. It's like, oh, Jared Kushner was trying to set up a back channel to Russia. And let's overlook, for simplicity's sake, that presidents and the White House, every administration has tried to set up back channels for communication, not to elude detection, but to work on deals, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
But we're supposed to believe on one hand that Trump and Putin and Russia colluded to win the election to steal it from Her Royal Highness, who deserved it, the most qualified candidate ever in the history of the world, more than George Washington, for crying out.
That's true.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
And so they stole it, and we have no proof of it, because that evidently they had some sort of method of communicating to create this environment and to steal the election from the most qualified person ever. They had some sort of communication system that eluded detection. Yet they get into the White House, and Jared Kushner is supposedly trying to set up a secret back channel. Excuse me. I thought they had a back channel. I thought they were communicating somehow to steal the election.
Mm-hmm.
So why would they even need to set up a back channel? If they were trying to do something secret and nefarious, why wouldn't they just use the system they already had set up that seemed to work extremely well? It worked so well, this system, kept Hillary Clinton from even going to Wisconsin. That's what they, that's how good it is. Yep.
All right, Patrick, lots more to cover. I want to talk about James Comey. He's going to have his day in front of questioners starting this week. And then I want to talk about Reza Aslan, the CNN religious contributor who has his own show on spirituality and some of the things coming out of his potty mouth. And we'll take a short break and be right back. It's 15 minutes after the hour. Good morning. Nice to have you with us. That is true. God does love you. And I love you. And my guest, Patrick Albanese, he probably loves you too, but I'll let him speak for himself. Patrick, what do you say?
I like them very much.
Oh, awesome. All right, let's look at what's going on this week with James Comey. He's going to be testifying. It seems like it's going to be interesting. Former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn is going to be a subject. And Vladimir Putin said in his interview with Megyn Kelly, I don't know who this man is.
Yeah, who is he?
Who is he?
Which, of course, I've always had this philosophy whenever, you know, somebody would say, you know, I'm not a very good liar. I'd say, well, that's exactly what I'd expect a good liar to say.
Yeah.
You know, so you go, well, I can't imagine that, you know, Vlad would say, yeah, Mike, what about him?
Right.
We just had lunch, you know. So, you know, can you,
who do you trust?
Yeah. Although, you know, over the years, remember, just four and a half short years ago, Mitt Romney was mocked for saying that Russia was a threat, that they were a geopolitical foe, and we had done the Russian reset, and supposedly everything was just hunky-dory in Russia land. And what's amazing is we don't even talk about that anymore. We just say, how is it possible that these people, these Trump people and these Republicans didn't know what a big threat Russia was? Like, aren't you the people that just mocked the candidate from a few years back saying, well, you don't know anything. We got the inside track. So obviously this escaped their detection or they lied.
Yeah.
Doesn't leave a whole lot of opportunity. And you know, now we're supposedly going to blow the lid off of it. But do you think there's a Vegas over under on the whole Comey testimony this week? You think people are actually putting money on this?
Oh, I bet they are. I mean, his credibility is kind of shot right now. And I'm wondering at the end of this week, who's going to hate him more?
You know, I'm not sure. You know, maybe he'll just go for the, you know, the clean sweep and just have everybody hate him. And if you're a person right now on Monday, how much credibility do you want to put? I don't even want to say credibility. How much emphasis do you want to put into what you say about how important Comey's testimony is on the off chance that it goes the opposite way you'd like it to go? So if you're a person saying Comey's word is gold and then he testifies – and it doesn't go the way you want it, say, no, I didn't mean gold. I mean gold plated. I mean, and a cheap gold plated
leaf.
That.
Gold leaf.
Gold leaf. And a faux gold leaf. It's the whole thing's faux. You know, and or do you, on the other hand, say, you know, the guy has absolutely zero credibility. Then he comes out, you know, let's say you're one of the Republicans currently saying, the guy has zero credibility. And then he comes out and says, there was absolutely no collusion. Trump never did those things that people said he did. I don't even know where these supposed friends of mine saw this supposed memo that I never wrote, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you come out, you know, a couple days later and say, that man has credibility. Leave him alone. You know, I don't know if there's – I think you just kind of have to play the middle of the field and say, well, it'll be interesting to see what he says. And then you prepare to shoot it down or support it.
Yeah.
It's a mess.
Yeah.
It's a mess.
Yeah. Well, how about a tough week for CNN? They had a little bit of a rough week. The religious reporter who's got a show, CNN host Reza Aslan, came out and said some pretty ugly things. And then he turned around and apologized. He said some crude things about the president, which I can't repeat on the air. And then he apologized for having used such bad language, he said. And then if you dig up his old tweets, not only does he use that language, but even worse.
Yeah, and it's funny because he says that in his apology, he said, that's not like me to use profanity. And you go back in his Twitter timeline and you say, no, you're right. It's not like you to use that kind of language. You use much worse, much worse. Wow. I'm thinking the reason why this guy might have rejected Christianity as a lifestyle for him is he said, wow, it's so restrictive. I can't speak my mind.
Right. Right.
And what's amazing is even looking at it for this guy being a religious reporter, I look at it and I think, my gosh, I don't say stuff like that in my worst days of non-believership, just, you know, roaming the earth as a heathen wannabe. Mm-hmm. You know, so to speak. I was like, this is some pretty vile stuff. And he is the person, he's a religious scholar, for whatever that's worth, that CNN chose and said, yeah, we want you to have a show on faith. Doesn't that tell you everything you need to know of how CNN looks at people of faith? They go, here you go. We got a show for faith people. Yeah. And the purpose of the show is to try to talk you out of your faith. Here's the guy we got behind it. And he's uh-huh. not pretty.
Yeah.
So this is coming on the heels of them firing Kathy Griffin. You
yeah.
go, wow.
I mean, that was a cosmic meltdown with Kathy Griffin this weekend with her little crocodile tear apology. And to me, it just got to be more painful. She should have just kept quiet and just went away for a little while.
Just go away for a little while. But what she did is she just guaranteed that she's going to go away for a long while. You know, she gave herself a vacation.
Mm-hmm. She did.
You know, it'll be interesting to see if this Reza Aslan also is asked to maybe take a step down. You know, I'm not saying we should go out and try to claim scalps. But people, unfortunately, they're the ones that set these rules, and now it's coming back to get them. They're the ones that used to cry for people's heads on a platter, and, you know, then Kathy Griffin delivers one, and it turned out to be her own.
Yeah. Patrick, over the weekend, you were telling me about an acronym. Was it started D-A – what was that acronym again?
Oh, DARVO. D-A-R-V-O.
Yeah. And you were explaining that to me while I was watching Grand Slam home runs being hit, so I wasn't super paying attention. But I'd like you to talk about that again.
Yeah, it's a technique that you see a lot. And I don't know if people just do it on a subconscious level. But whenever they maybe step over a line like a Kathy Griffin, one of the first things they'll often do is deny that they did it. And then the very next thing that often happens is the attack, the A part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And attack often resembles something like doubling down on the original idea, which of course is what Kathy Griffin did. So she denied that she did anything wrong. Then she attacks by essentially doubling down. Then the RVO portion of it is to reverse the victim and the offender, and where they then say, you know what? I'm the victim here, and the person that I offended is the one who offended me. And she just played right into that script. She denied it. She doubled down by attacking. Then she reversed victim and offender with, you know, a lawyer standing by her side and saying, you know, I'm the one being victimized here. They're ruining my career. And that was a suicide mission, mm-hmm. is what that was. But if you keep that in mind, sometimes when you see these things, you go, why did that person double down? You go, well, that's the technique. And if you see somebody denying they did something wrong and then maybe doubling down, know that very soon what will be coming your way is they're going to be claiming the victimhood, because mm-hmm. that's the only safe place left for them, is under that shelter of a victimhood, saying, you know, please stop beating up on me. You know, I took my shots. It's kind of a hit and run. They want to take their shots, and they want to be protected from being called to the carpet or attacked back.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of old.
It's a fascinating strategy, though, because we watched her do that right before our eyes over the weekend.
And the strategy has worked for many, many years.
Yeah.
You know, for people, it's like the reason why they do it is they go, this is great. Once I claim victimhood, they'll start to leave me alone. It unfortunately has lost, not unfortunately, fortunately, it has lost its effectiveness. And one of these days, we're going to get down to truth being the thing that works best.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying, I did it, and I shouldn't have done it, and I have some reflecting to do.
You had a Thomas Sowell quote, and I would love for you to have that. If you have it available, otherwise I think I could find it. Do you remember what that was?
I don't know. Did I? Yes, I did. I remember that.
Yeah, it was about the truth. The truth is not complicated. What is difficult is evading it. That's when it gets complicated, when you evade the truth.
What gets complex is evading the truth.
Yes.
And that's when you have to remember the things that you said. And I get it. I'm not immune to having made mistakes in my life and then trying to cover up the falsehoods with additional falsehoods, throwing out, like, please, 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 please bite on one of these. Please. And if you're lucky, it doesn't feel like you're lucky, but if you're lucky, the truth will be the thing that is the only thing that can have people say, well, all right, you got a little bit of penance to do here.
Yeah.
You've got some repair work to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're lucky, people will hold your feet to the fire and say,
right,
come on, just admit the truth. I found that years of working for people, I remember once a boss coming to me, she was all upset about something that had happened. She said, I don't know who did this. I go, oh, that was me. And she completely changed her tone. And she said, oh, nobody ever admits. She said, well, could you just do me a favor and in the future, you know, don't do that? And I was like, sure, no problem. And that was the entire end of the situation. She worked up this head of steam because she said, well, I'm going to be, you know, basically, you know, blowing into the breeze here. It's not going to go anywhere. So I might as well just lose my temper. And then some guy comes forward and said, oh, I did that.
All right, Patrick, got to run. Thanks so much. Talk to you next week.
All right.
All right. We'll take a short break. Be right back. It's half past the hour. Dr. Adam Carrington is next, professor from Hillsdale College, professor of politics, and he is always such a great resource. We will be with him in just a minute. Good morning. 25 minutes until the top of the hour. Bill Arnold here. Change is an inevitable part of life as we navigate seasons of change and conflict. Dr. Greg Smalley says we can actually grow closer to our spouse and kids.
As far as how do we grow closer in terms of when we hit transitions, I love 1 Corinthians 7:28. And there's a little part of that verse that says, but for those who marry, you will face many troubles in this life. And that's just meant to say that, you know what, all of us who are married, all of us in relationship, we're going to hit times of transition, frustration. We're going to go through crises. We're going to hit conflict. And that shouldn't be a surprise. So in light of the fact that, listen, we're all going to go through some hard times, how do we navigate through that in a way that not just helps us to survive, but actually can help us to thrive through that? Because I don't want to just make it through transition times with Aaron. I want us to come out better, stronger, closer, more connected. And I really do think that's possible if we're intentional.
Oh, he's so wise. That's Dr. Greg Smalley. If you want to hear that full interview, go to myfaithradio.com. Type in Stabilizing Marriage Stormy Time, and you'll get there. All right, next up, Dr. Adam Carrington. Be back in a minute.
The church being alive and well does not depend and never has depended on people escaping persecution and death. This is Jim Garlow. Sometimes it seems that the church can only really be alive and well when it's at the point of death. God works mysteriously and has taught us in His Word that one can only gain his or her life by losing it. Christ promised that His followers would share His suffering. And so in spite of the staggering losses of the Christian church over the centuries and the persecution and death that's continuing today, we proclaim in faith that the true church of Jesus Christ is alive and it is well. It was the Roman Empire that fell, not the true Christian empire. The city of God survived. And as you listen today, the church is 2,000 years old and still counting. There's more at jimgarlow.com. We'll do our part, keeping you informed at jimgarlow.com.
It's 20 minutes until the top of the hour. Good morning. Dr. Adam Carrington is professor of politics at Hillsdale College, and he is a regular contributor to the show, and I love his wisdom. And Adam, good morning.
Good morning, Bill. Great to be back with you.
Thank you. You make my Mondays so wonderful because you bring such balance to such hard, difficult situations. This attack in London, 7 people killed, 48 injured, taken to the hospital, 21 are in critical condition. And this is very stressful. And the mayor of London says, don't be alarmed.
Well, I mean, he partially he was saying to not be alarmed at the fact that in a society that has banned guns since 1996, that you know the police were going to be upping their use of guns and such. But I think it does, given the reaction that some have given to it and some who support the mayor have given to it, it does raise a question that is being asked about how do we deal with these sort of terror attacks. Are we supposed to accept as some are saying that this is just the new normal, that mm-hmm. you now have to live under this constant threat that something like this could happen in London, that something like this could happen in the United States with, you know, the San Bernardino attacks? Or is there something we can, should, even must do to combat this form of terror and to call it what it is, to call it that this is religiously motivated by those who understand Islam to be a religion that must conquer by the sword? And does the West, that, you know, depends as it does on a sort of Judeo-Christian heritage, does it have the stamina, does it have the will, does it have the tenacity to stand up for itself and articulate and militarily and verbally why it is worth surviving, why it's worth protecting?
Mm-hmm. This is why I love you so much, Adam, because you bring such balance to the conversation. Now, I'm looking at the motivation of these attacks. Is it driven by the fact it's Ramadan, or is it driven by the fact that the election is this Thursday?
Or a combo platter
of both?
It really could be. I mean, Ramadan being a higher, being a Islamic holy time, I think I can use that phrase for it, certainly heightens those who practice their understanding of the faith, just like Christmas, Easter, you know, other mm-hmm. holidays that Christians celebrate. But how do you then react? How do you then act upon it? And I think that certainly could be, even though we can't get completely into their minds. We do know, based on what they were yelling about, this is for Allah, that it was religiously motivated. Could it be related to the attacks? Absolutely, it could be, too. There was an election back in 2003 in Spain where Islamic terrorists, Al-Qaeda at that point, set up a terrorist attack in Spain to try to sway the election, and I think we're actually successful at that point. So I think it could be a combination, even though I can't quite peer into the heart of what these men were, what their calculus was.
Mm-hmm. Adam, let's talk a little bit about the United States pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement. Of course, that was voluntary, and if Barack Obama would have taken that to the Senate, it would have gotten clobbered. So he, through executive order, got us into this agreement, which I believe was non-binding because every other participant got in the way of through ratification of their Senate and legislative process, except for the U.S.
Yeah, you make a number of important points about this Paris Accord, where it was supposed to commit those who signed on to it to some possibly very draconian attempts to deal with the perception of climate change. And I say perception, I know there's debates about it, I'm not saying which way one should go on that, but that they were trying to deal with what they saw as an environmental crisis. But you're right that while some of these things were pretty draconian, the United States never committed itself officially. And I think that brings up two problems that you've already hinted at. One, it wasn't binding, so it wasn't for the United States, so it wasn't as if we had anything to force us in except for our own will.
Mm-hmm.
Pulling out was not that hard. But the other is that's not how the Constitution sets up how we are supposed to do interactions with other countries. How are we supposed to come to agreements with other countries? It's not supposed to be the president alone doing it. He is the one that is supposed to negotiate. He is the one that is supposed to carry out. But the check is the United States Senate through the treaty-making process. And you're again right, it would not have passed. And presidents, and this has a long history well before President Trump, of presidents going around that constitutional process and trying to unilaterally do international agreements with other countries. And so I guess what I'm saying is it's on one hand not a big deal in the sense that this was fairly easy to get out of. On the other hand, it was a big deal because if we had actually gone through with them, I think President Trump made some good points about the cost for the American economy and therefore for American jobs that could have happened if we had voluntarily gone through with our with this agreement.
Adam, was it an overreach by President Obama getting in and an overreach by President Trump getting out?
I think it was an overreach by President Obama getting in, but I think as you said, it's a non-binding agreement. Basically, it is a set of well wishes, not a set of commitment. I mean, it's almost as if they signed up for an open marriage, right? no real commitment and no real fidelity demanded, just if you feel like it. And so I think the in many ways this was papering over the fact that President Obama and others weren't able to come to a real concrete agreement with teeth to it, with push to it. And I think that makes it so President Trump pulling out of it isn't that big a deal given the nature. By big a deal, it isn't an illegal or a problematic action that he has every right to do it. In fact, that's why I think a bit of a freak out by many of the people that are on the left that are opposed to Trump, I think are misunderstanding the nature of what this agreement actually did and what it actually permitted to other countries to do under it.
Yeah. It's almost like I heard from the left people saying, how dare you pull out of something that was voluntary?
Yeah. And that I think that just shows a lack of looking at the particulars of the agreement. They just saw that this was a climate agreement and seemed to decide that that this was a massive overreach of executive power when it's no different than what someone they supported, President Obama, did in getting into the agreement in the first place.
Mm-hmm. And what about the response? It's been pretty severe from a lot of people. Apparently, because we're pulling out of this voluntary agreement, kids are going to have asthma and we're going to run out of air.
Yes, yes. I mean, I think I saw on the John Oliver show, I think, on HBO, that they had a picture in the background while they were talking about the story of the world on fire. you have these celebrities basically saying that people are going to die from this. Our future is going to go up in flames, literally, like I said, some of the other people have declared. And I think what it makes is it makes it harder to trust people like this when they're criticizing the president or criticizing views they don't agree with in general, because if every problem, if every accusation, you have to dial up the intensity and the vitriol to 10, how do you discern what's real and what's not? And I think that they're really misplaying their hand in doing this, because I think they're not taking account of the facts, and I think they're not taking into account the reasons that President Trump gave for why this is reasonable to pull out of. And,
mm-hmm.
and I think that that's just a miscalculation on their part up and down.
Yeah. Adam, I want to continue this conversation on the other side of the break. It is 13 minutes until the top of the hour. Thanks for being with us. It is 10 minutes until the top of the hour. Bill Arnold here talking to Dr. Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College, favorite guest of mine. And Adam, I want to move away here from the Paris Accord. It's interesting that that when I was reading an article about it, it was now I can't find it anyway. But it was instead of an agreement, it should be something more like we have volunteered to participate. And because it isn't good for the U.S. to be in this agreement, the president said, well, maybe we should pull out and then re-enter it under different terms. So there still might be a little glimmer of hope for the people that think we should be in it.
Yeah, and I think his best line, I think, that was often quoted is that he was the president of Pittsburgh, not Paris,
right,
when he made that decision. And I think what he at least said that it's not that the United States is not committed to doing its part in environmental, you know, taking care of the environment, that we're all invested in preserving, caring for, exercising the dominion that God's given us. I mean, he didn't use that language, but
right,
exercising that over our world. But at the same time, that's not the only factor that needs to be taken into account, and it can't be the United States bearing a disproportionate burden of making that happen, because not only is that unfair to the United States, it won't accomplish the goal if other countries aren't doing their part as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, I want to ask you about the president's administration having the Supreme Court review the travel ban.
Yes, this issue hasn't been as in the forefront, but I think it now will obviously be again, which is that the travel ban that's gone through several iterations that bans for 90 days people from seven countries, most of them majority Muslim countries, from entering the United States. And what he has done is, because several courts lower than the Supreme Court have said this is unconstitutional, that it's a violation of religious liberty, that it is a discriminatory on the basis of the Islamic faith, that it doesn't pass muster. And I think he is wanting the Supreme Court to take a look at this and setting up, interestingly, the first case that the first major case possibly that Justice Gorsuch, that he put on the court, will have to decide in relation to the man who nominated him.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting how this goes about. I think there are a number of ways it could play out, but it'll be interesting if they actually do end up ruling on it come fall is probably when they would do so.
Mm-hmm. Does this make sense to have a travel ban coming from Middle Eastern countries where terrorism is so high?
I think it does make sense. I think even if you don't agree with how it's gone about, I do think it's constitutional. And I think that it's fascinating how they've argued about this, because, you know, a lot of people who, and I'll say as a side note, I think the original travel ban was poorly written and I think had lots of problems with it, but I think the reissuing of it took care of most of those. But what's been interesting is most people say that a lot of people on the right side of the spectrum consider themselves originalists want to find the original intent of actions,
mm-hmm,
orders of the executive, laws passed by Congress. How do you get that original intent, though, becomes a debate. And what a lot of judges have done is they've said, we're going to look at things President candidate Trump, before he was president, said about Muslims and use that as a way to gauge what his intention was in the travel ban. And then there are other people saying, that's not the way to gauge the original intent. You should just look at what the words say, which say nothing about religion, say merely that these countries have a history of terrorism, and some of them have very, very hard ways for us to vet whether these people really are safe or not. And so it's been I think that's part of what it will come down to before the Supreme Court. Even if you believe that original intent of action should be followed, gauging that original intent, what do you look to? The words of the executive order? Do you look to what President Trump said on the campaign trail? And if you just look at the words, it looks very constitutional.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at what he said on the campaign trail, it gets a little fuzzier, but the question is it legitimate to look at those things to come up with your conclusion as a judge?
Mm-hmm. We just have a couple minutes left, Adam. Would you want to be in James Comey's wingtips this week?
No, and I don't care how expensive they are. So I don't mind a nice pair of shoes.
No one does.
But it's a position that in many ways he's put himself in. So as he testifies on June 8th, it will. I think what I would hope for is some some clarity. I mean, not that any step of this whole issue about Russia and the FBI investigations has ever given us clarity or cool, sedate reasonableness on the different sides. But what I would hope for is, are there concrete things? Do we actually have concrete information as to whether he was pressured to change how he went about the investigation into Russia by the president? And if not, then a lot of people need to quit making that accusation. If so, then we need to look into how unethical, even illegal, was that. And I'm hoping some of those questions, that a lot of the he said, she said, gets a little bit closer to some truth that we can reasonably move forward with and see, are we wasting our time on this? Or is there something else that, do we need to be moving on to other things that are more important to the country? Or is this something that we need to, is Donald Trump some part of the swamp that needs to be drained?
Interesting. Yeah. You use the word reasonably. I really like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's something that, even going back to the American founders, they focused on that.
Yeah.
That people can act rationally, they can act impulsively. And we need to encourage, as people who are self-governing, our rational selves much more than our impulsive selves.
Yeah. Adam, thanks so much. Look forward to speaking to you again next time. Have a great week.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks so much. A couple minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a short break, and then we're going to go to news. Be back in a minute. Couple minutes until the top of the hour. Coming up next, we're going to talk about guilt and shame, recognizing patterns of shame, and it starts back in Genesis 3. My guest is Dr. Glenn Pickering, and you're not going to want to miss this. Be back in a minute.
Thank you for listening to this conversation from Faith Radio Mornings. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings. Also, take a moment to subscribe to this podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a show.